Manchakaputrubhyascha Kripasindhuvayavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavya Namo. Srikant Maharaj has inquired about the means of souls, living entities, falling or being saved from entering a hellish condition of life. What does a hellish condition of life mean? It means that one in one's life has committed sinful activities, and for that one will have to suffer. So Prakrit Maharaj, although it's only days from his own death, he's concerned about the suffering of others. Prabhupada had mentioned that this is the heart of a Vaishnava. Paradukaduki. He himself experiences no misery. Why? Because he is in the shelter of Krishna. That is the meaning actually of a Vaishnava. He's taken full shelter of Krishna. Krishna is everything for him. He is in Krishna's hands. And he himself suffers no misery due to the ecstasy of having attained Krishna's shelter. But he is watching and seeing the suffering of others, and that causes him pain. That is called, of course, compassion. So Prakrit Maharaj, as a great Vaishnava, felt compassion, and he saw that people were performing so many abominable, horrible activities, and they were going to suffer, being thrown into hellish conditions, as Sukadeva had described at the end of Canto 5. So therefore, Maharaj Prakrit asks, how can one be saved from this type of suffering? And Sukadeva Goswami's initial reply was that one has to perform prayaschitta, or atoning acts, according to the Vedas, according to the Dharma Shastra. There are certain prescriptions to counteract the sin one has performed, and therefore one doesn't have to suffer. Like, for example, if one commits some type of a crime in the state. Sometimes they say that if you do 20 hours of community service, then you don't have to go to jail. So that's something like an atonement. The punishment isn't anywhere near as strong, but one has to do something, one has to sacrifice something. But in one's heart, in the core of one's heart, the tendency to commit sinful activities or improper activities or selfish activities has not been removed. So therefore, when Maharaj Prakrit heard the prescription of Sukadeva Goswami, he basically rejected it. He questioned it. He said, how is this going to help? Of course, the tendency, it's superficial. You perform a horrible act and then you atone for it, for that act, so you don't have to reap the horrible result, the suffering result. And then after you perform the atoning act, then one acts in the same horrible way again, and back and forth and back and forth. Sinning, atoning, sinning, atoning, sinning, atoning. So that's really useless. Kunjara socham, he coins the phrase, kunjara sochavat, the bathing of an elephant who goes in the water, pours water on himself, cleanses himself very nicely, and then when he gets on the land again, he throws dirt all over his body. Kunjara sochavat. So he said, what is the use of such a bath? What is the use of such atonement if it's on such a superficial level? So hearing this, Sukadev Goswami speaks further and he deepens the level of his answer. And here is the verse in text 11. Bhadrayani Uvacha means the son of Vyasadev or Sukadev. He speaks now after Prickett Maharaj had questioned further, asking him to clarify. He says, Karmana karma nirharo nahi atyantika ishyate avidvad adhikaritvat prayaschitam vimarshanam. Karmana karma nirharo, that by fruit of activities, if one performs a fruit of activities, a karmic type of activity of atonement, to counteract a karmic activity that one has done, nahi atyantika ishyate. The actual cleansing doesn't become possible. One's cleansing is only on the surface. Avidyad adhikaritvat prayaschitam vimarshanam. Because one is lacking knowledge. One performs an activity in ignorance, and then similarly in ignorance one performs an atoning activity. But one has missed the point of knowledge, the realization of knowledge of what the law is, and that one shouldn't break the law, and what the essence of the principle is. And what is that knowledge? What is the essence of the principle? That is that we are eternal souls, that we are souls, that we are eternal, and no amount of selfishly motivated activities on the sensual level can truly bring us happiness. We are eternal souls. So that is the basic platform of knowledge. And without achieving that knowledge, one misidentifies himself with the body, and therefore naturally, in bodily consciousness, thinks in terms, if I think of my body, I think that how will my body be satisfied? If I think I'm eternal, then I'll be thinking completely differently. So without this knowledge, without knowledge, even of this most basic kind, that we are eternal, that we are souls, without that knowledge, the tendency to free oneself from sinning and then going to suffer is practically non-existent. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami the son of Vedavyas, he answers his doubt that what is the use of this kunjara sochavat, this atonement like an elephant bathing. He says, my dear king, since acts meant to neutralize pious actions are also fruitive, they are based on one's own desire to enjoy. The consciousness is based on oneself. They will not release one from the tendency to act fruitively. Persons who subject themselves to the rules and regulations of atonement are not at all intelligent, because they're not getting to the root of the problem. Indeed, they're in the mode of darkness. What is the mode of darkness? It means ignorance. And what does ignorance mean? It means lack of knowledge. As darkness means the lack of light, so ignorance means the lack of knowledge, the illumination of knowledge. So people, those who think the solution to sinful actions is an atonement, is those people are lacking knowledge. They are in ignorance, darkness. Unless one is freed from the mode of ignorance, trying to counteract one action through another is useless, because this will not uproot one's desire. Desire for what? For further ignorant activities. until one actually realizes deeply that there is no future in these activities, materialistic, selfish, bodily-centered, bodily-oriented activities, anything for the body, everything for the body, until one actually realizes that, but I shouldn't act like that, I'm eternal, I'm a soul, then the desire to act sinfully, selfishly, will always exist, and it will continuously reoccur, even after so many multiple atonements of activity atonement, sinful activity atonement, sinful activity atonement. Because the desire, the sinful desire, the desire to sin will not be removed from the heart. Thus, even though one may superficially seem pious, he will undoubtedly be prone to act impiously. Therefore, real atonement is enlightenment in perfect knowledge. And then Prabhupada, and in Sanskrit, that the real atonement is prayaschitam, that real atonement is vimarshanam, full knowledge of Vedanta, and ultimately vedeschasavar aham eva vidyo. Ultimately, that knowledge comes on the level of knowing our relationship with Krishna. That Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and we are eternally His servants. Jiver Swarupoi Krishna Nityadas. And so that's the ultimate knowledge. But any knowledge, any spiritual knowledge, knowledge that we are souls, knowledge that there is Paramatma, there is a super soul, and we should surrender to the super soul, knowledge of Bhagavan, of Krishna, these will all uproot this tendency for fruit of desires from the heart if one is fixed in any of these knowledges. So, real atonement, Sukadev Goswami says, is enlightenment in perfect knowledge. So again, there's ignorance and the word enlightenment. The opposite of darkness is light, and in the word enlightenment is light. Light means knowledge, realization, the attainment of light in one's consciousness, the removal of darkness, enlightenment. And again, perfect knowledge, Vedanta, Vedanta, the end or the goal of the Vedas, is to know Krishna. And by that knowledge, one understands the Supreme Absolute Truth. And life without knowledge is animal life, basically. Because animals, their consciousness, their awareness is only of their bodily needs. When the animal is hungry, in some primitive way, he thinks, hunger, I am hungry, and therefore I will eat. The cat thinks, I will eat the bird, and the bird thinks, I will eat the bug, and the bug thinks, I'll eat the plant, and the plant thinks, I'll eat the minerals and the soil. In their own, according to their bodies, they think in their own primitive, or less primitive, or more primitive, more primitive, more primitive type of ways. But ultimately, human beings who are thinking in the same way are just sophisticated animals. So knowledge how to eat and sleep and satisfy the senses is considered animal knowledge. And knowledge of our relationship with Krishna, that is true knowledge, ultimate knowledge. Prabhupada explains right in the beginning of the purport. The Guru, Sukadev Goswami, has examined Prickett Maharaj because he's given him an improper or an answer on a superficial level. Yes, prayaschitta, atonement. Perform the Vedic rituals to atone for the sins and remove the suffering. So he's given him that answer to test the disciple, to see if he would just simply superficially accept that, accept the superficial. So he has examined Prickett Maharaj, and it appears that the king has passed one phase of the examination by rejecting the process of atonement because it involves fruit of activities. Now Sukadev Goswami is suggesting the platform of speculative knowledge. So engage in this vimarshanam, Knowledge, speculative knowledge, when Prabhupada says speculative knowledge, he means gyan, or an ascending process. By the power of my mind, and by focusing my consciousness on itself and controlling the mind, I will understand the Absolute. And what one understands by taking that process is that one is none different from the Absolute. One identifies himself as the consciousness, not as the body. And one identifies himself, aham, I am Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, I am spirit, I am eternal. So immediately there's such a great relief from suffering if one understands that. So now Sukadeva is saying, yes, what everyone needs, true atonement, is this type of knowledge. I am spirit. And if we take that knowledge to the ultimate, it's our relationship with Krishna. Jnanakanda. So he's proposed Karmakanda, now Jnanakanda, or knowledge. Text 12. My dear king, if a diseased person eats the pure, uncontaminated food prescribed by a physician, he is gradually cured because he gets strength, and then the body will cure itself. And the infection of disease can no longer touch him. Similarly, if one follows the regulative principles of knowledge, he gradually progresses towards liberation from material contamination. So he's now going to explain the process of knowledge, attaining knowledge. And when one performs the we'll read what the in text 13 and 14, it describes what the practices of knowledge are. What brings one knowledge, and basically it's not doing anything wrong. It's keeping oneself aloof from the material atmosphere. But there is a danger in the jnana yogic practice of speculative knowledge, of limiting one's realization by what one can attain by one's own power. And that danger is that one makes such a strong identity, his realization, as he realizes his oneness with consciousness, and then he thinks himself the supreme. That's the danger in that. The danger of karma is that one gets attached to the fruits of one's actions, and the danger of gyan is that one identifies oneself with the supreme. The danger of yoga is that one becomes attached to the powers that come to one through practicing yoga. So each of these paths have dangers, but yet they are bona fide paths that will elevate one in consciousness. So here Sukadeva is describing the path of knowledge, and here's the practice. Tapasa brahmacharyena samena cha namena cha tyagena satya sochabhyam yamena niyamena va dehavag buddhijam dira dharmagya shadayan vita Chipantyagam maharapi venugul mam ivannala. Tapasya. Tapasya brahmacharena. One, tapasya means voluntarily rejecting material enjoyment. Brahmacharena, celibacy. Samena, by controlling the mind. All austerities, becoming pure. Damena, controlling the senses. Tyagena, renunciation or voluntarily giving charity to good causes. Satya, truthfulness. Sochabhyam, keeping oneself clean internally and externally. So this is the process of gyan, because it situates one in the mode of goodness and detaches the mind from sense gratification, and one gets control of the mind in this way. Yamena, by avoiding cursing and violence causing trouble to others. Niyamena, the positive, or the regularly, Prabhupada translates it here, regularly chanting the holy name of the Lord. And deha vak buddhijam, everything performed by the body, words, and intelligence. Dhira, those who are sober, dharma, gya, should be fully imbued with knowledge of religious principles. One should know what one is doing, that one is trying to consciously detach oneself from all material activities, knowing full well that material activities, selfish activities, activities based on the body, they entangle one in the material world and reactions. So, shraddhaya anvita, endowed with faith, if one acts like this, following this practice, is chipanti agam mahattapi, that one will destroy all kinds of sinful activities and sinful reactions. Mahattapi, even if they were abominable, one will destroy it. And an example Sukadev gives, venu gulmam iva anala. Just like there are leaves and creepers underneath a bamboo tree, and anala, fire burns those up. So all sinful tendencies and sinful actions will be burned, just like fire burns up the leaves and underneath the leaves and creepers underneath the bamboo tree, and the bamboo also. But what's the problem? If we have this in our yard, we have this elephant grass, and you can cut them down, you can burn them, and the leaves and the creepers around, they can cut the bamboo the grass itself, very much like bamboo. But what will happen very soon? It grows back. Why? Because the very root is where the life of the bamboo is. So similarly, if one performs his knowledge, one is in touch, one removes the sins, the sinful tendencies, up to and the sinful reactions, but not on the deepest root level. As the bamboo isn't burnt, only the outward manifestation of the bamboo is burnt, but the root remains. So that's the example he's given, because he wants to show, in the next verse, he's going to bring it to what destroys the root itself, completely removing the bamboo-like tendency to sin. And there's only one thing that does that. Because if one is... that's why here, this is in the sixth canto, having read the second canto and the third canto, we've read how the soul acquires false ego when he comes to the material world. And what is this false ego? It's this turning the back on Krishna and becoming independent on Krishna, independent in joya. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti janiha. And that's the root tendency. So even though one may have knowledge that I'm a soul, if he has turned his back on Krishna, there will always be the tendency to fall into material life again. So Prabhupada's purport here keeps pointing to this point. The verses are speaking on one level of, yes, jnana, yes, knowledge. But Prabhupada is bringing it verses in the future where Sukadeva is going to explain what the true essential principle of atonement is, the primal principle, and we'll hear that in the next verse. So here, tapasya, austerities, brahmacharya, celibacy, control of the senses, control of the mind, all these are so important. And actually all are accomplished if one performs bhakti. The deepest. Sometimes we'll say that bhakti is the deepest process because it deeply attacks the problem at the root, at the very identity, the identification of the soul, who the soul thinks of himself as. So it's the deepest. And sometimes we'll talk about bhakti as the highest because one cannot go higher than understanding one's loving relationship with Krishna. So So higher and deep, highest and deepest, become one in bhakti. And all the results, all the attempts to purify oneself through tapasya, brahmacharya, the control of the senses and mind, control of the tongue, intolerance, etc., they purify oneself, and ultimately, if one is fortunate, they will bring one to the level of bhakti. And bhakti is the only path, marg, that removes the tendency to act improperly at its very root. Because, the original question of Prickett Maharaj is how to save people from hellish suffering. So the answer is, well, one answer is you remove the reactions, the hellish reactions. And then the deeper answer, the jnana, that was a karma answer. Through karmic activities, you remove the actions. And then the jnana answer is you move the sinful activities. You remove the reactions, you remove the sinful activities through jnana. But bhakti will touch the root and cut it, extract it, the root tendency to sin, which is you remove that desire to act as if we were the Lord, as if we were the center of existence, as if we were Krishna's competitor and not his servant. By establishing ourselves fully in the loving service of Krishna, which is what bhakti means, then naturally one is with Krishna, linked with Krishna. So now the conclusion, text 15, a very important verse, the ultimate point. Prabhupada's going to, I'll read a bit of Prabhupada's purport to 15 before we even read the verse. He says, in the previous verse, Sukadeva Goswami gave the example that the dried leaves of a creeper beneath a bamboo tree may be completely burnt to ashes by a fire, although the creepers may sprout again because the root is still in the ground. Similarly, because the root of sinful desire is not destroyed in the heart of a person who is cultivating knowledge, but who has no taste for devotional service, there is a possibility that the sinful desire will reappear. And that's what the example he gives is. Now for bhakti, he's giving another example. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dunvantikatsneya niharam iva bhaskaram bhaskara. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya. There are some people, because bhakti can't be performed by anyone and everyone. It is rare, it is wonderful. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye. Out of thousands amongst people. So kechit, some people, kevalaya bhaktya, by executing pure devotional service, one-pointed devotional service, bhaktya, Vasudeva Parayana, to who? Bhakti to who? To Vasudeva. In complete attachment, Parayana, to the Lord, the all-pervading Lord, those who perform devotional service, fixed one-pointed devotional service, acting for His pleasure, to that Lord, agam, sins, dunvanti, and all kinds of sinful reactions, all kinds of sinning, dunvanti, destroyed. Kartsneya, completely, fully, with no possibility of return. It is burnt to ashes. Agam dunvanti kartsneya, niharam eva bhaskaram. Now another example, in contrast to the previous example of the fire underneath the bamboo, but this is, there are no roots in this one, because niharam eva bhaskaram. Bhaskara means the sun, niharam the fog. Just like when the sun arises, the mist and fog is completely destroyed, evaporated. And there is no root left, it's gone completely, fully. And the sun comes out after a few minutes or half hours or hours, fog is gone. It's completely gone. No trace. Nothing under the surface. So that's what happens. Niyaram eva baskanam, by performing this kevalaya bhakti to Vasudev, becoming dear to Vasudev. Here's Prabhupada's translation. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. We'll read from, so there's a fairly long purport of Prabhupada, so we'll read different parts of it. Since Maharaj Prickett was a great devotee, the answers of his guru, Sukadev Goswami, concerning Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda could not satisfy him. Therefore, Sukadev Goswami, knowing very well the heart of his disciple, explained the transcendental bliss of devotional service. The word kichit, which is used in this verse, means a few people, but not all. Not everyone can become Krishna conscious. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam sahasre shu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschinmam veti tatvata. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Practically no one understands Krishna as he is, for Krishna cannot be understood through pious activities or attainment of the most elevated speculative knowledge. Actually, the highest knowledge consists of understanding Krishna. Unintelligent men who do not understand Krishna are grossly puffed up, thinking they are liberated or have themselves become Krishna Narayan. This is ignorance. To indicate the purity of bhakti, devotional service, Srila Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anya vilasita sanyam gyanakamana vritam anakulena krishna anushilam bhakti uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruit of activity or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. So just acting fully for Krishna's pleasure, ekantiki bhakti, kevalaya bhakti, just fully, unmotivatedly, purely acting to please Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami further explains, in this is in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion, that bhakti is klesh agni subhada, which means if one takes the devotional service, all kinds of unnecessary labor and material distress cease entirely and one achieves all good fortune. Bhakti is so powerful that it is also said to be moksha lagudakrit. It minimizes the importance of liberation. Like, everyone would like to have $1,000. Why not? But $1,000,000 minimizes the value of $1,000 in the same way that bhakti minimizes the value of liberation. So all sins, kleshagni, all distress, the result of sins, are minimized by pure devotional service, even practice on the minimum steady level. And there are different levels of sins, Prabhupada explains further in the purport. There are different stages, not levels, but stages of sin. One is called Kuta, Bija, Aparabdha, and Parabdha. So Aparabdha is the like huge bag of sins that we carry from life to life. And out of those, these are, because in this world, if we commit a sinful activity, a horrible, horrendous sinful activity, we don't just suffer in this life as a reaction for that. We may suffer for thousands of lives, so we have a stock. If we do something horrible, like killing a cow, one has to suffer for every hair, a life for every hair on that cow's body. So for 10 minutes of sinful activity, one may get millions and millions of years, or billions of years even, of suffering. So we all have these huge bags of sin that we carry in our subtle body from one birth to the next. And that is called aparabdha. And then the particular body that we have, the allotment of sinful reactions and pious reactions that give us this particular body, is called parabdha. Aparabdha is the bag. Parabdha is this body, what it means, the karma that we're carrying. And then kuta means karma vasana, or tendencies, sinful tendencies. Just like some people have a tendency to do horrible things. It's just something in their mentality that's kuta level. And then there's bija, the seed. He makes the person who has that tendency makes a specific plan. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. I'm going to rob and cheat and steal. And we see other people don't have, they have different tendencies. That's the kuta level. So what bhakti does, it completely eradicates all the sin on all these different levels. Prabhupada explains a little later in the purport. In the Padma Purana, there is a statement that persons whose hearts are always attached to the loving service of Lord Vishnu are immediately released from all the reactions of sinful life. These reactions generally exist in four phases. Some of them are ready to produce results immediately. Some of them are in the form of seeds, some are unmanifested, and some are current. These are those four that we just mentioned. When devotional service is present in one's heart, desires to perform sinful activities have no place there. Niharam, just like iha bhaskaram, like when the sun has risen, the fog dissipates, the darkness dissipates. So similarly, when the sun of bhakti illuminates our heart, then the tendency to sin and act improperly is completely eradicated. It has no place there. Sinful life is due to ignorance, avidya, which means forgetfulness of one's constitutional position as an eternal servant of God. But when one is fully Krishna conscious, he realizes that he's God's eternal servant. So when one actually realizes this and one's heart is illuminated by this realization, then what chance of him to act improperly is there and sin? So this is the ultimate atonement. Then in the remainder of the purport, which we'll read a little part of, Prabhupada quotes Sri Jiva Goswami, who describes five different stages of bhakti. High stage of bhakti, coming down to the lowest stage, lowest of the five. And the lowest stage is called Abhas bhakti, abhas rupa bhakti, which means that's basically a shadow of bhakti, not the actual substance of bhakti. But this is amazing. He says, even in this stage, the lowest stage of abhas rupa bhakti, when bhakti really isn't fully manifest, all the reactions of sinful life are uprooted and vanquished. Srila Jiva Goswami expresses the opinion that the word kartsneya means that even if one has a desire to commit sinful activities, the roots of that desire are vanquished merely by abhas rupa bhakti. So what to speak of? higher forms of bhakti, when bhakti is blazing, this is just the reflection. Just like if the sun is there and we take a mirror and we can see the sun in the mirror over here, how much light is given off and how much heat is given off compared to the actual sun. So a bas is a reflection, like the mirror. So the reflection of the sun compared to the actual sun is so tiny and insignificant. So similarly, this bas rupa bhakti compared to high level blazing bhakti is insignificant, and yet nevertheless it removes all the different sinful reactions and tendencies in the heart. The example of bhaskara, the sun, is most appropriate. The abhas feature of bhakti is compared to twilight, and the accumulation of one's sinful activities is compared to fog. Since fog does not spread throughout the sky, the sun need do no more than merely manifest its first rays, and the fog immediately disappears. Similarly, if one has even a slight relationship with devotional service, all the fog of his sinful life is immediately vanquished. So a very important verse that Sukadeva explains. Kechit kevalaya bhakta vasudeva parayana agam sin dunvanti kartsnaya, completely vanquished. Niyaram eva vaskaram, just like the sun, just at the beginning when it's coming up, not even the midday sun, but the beginning, as soon as it comes up, the fog is dissipated. Therefore, if one is taking to bhakti, atonement is not required. One becomes purified. The sinful desire to sin is removed, as well as the sinful reactions. So therefore, Sukadeva continues and says, my dear king, if a sinful person engages in the service of a bona fide devotee of the Lord, and thus learns how to dedicate his life unto the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be completely purified. One cannot be purified merely by undergoing austerity, penance, brahmacharya, and the other methods of atonement that I have previously described. So now he's pointing directly to this. And Prabhupada, in his purport, I'll read the purport quickly, and we'll see if we can finish up the text 20. So the Sanskrit, natatta yagavan rajan puyate tapa adibi yata krishna arpita pranas tatpurusha nasivaya tatpurusha. That person who is engaged in the Lord's service by serving him, yata krishna arpita pranas, by giving prana, the life, arpita, offering it to Krishna by serving through the service of the Lord's devotees. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Tatpurusha refers to a preacher of Krishna consciousness, such as the spiritual master. Srila Narottama Das Thakur has said, Charya Vaishnava, Vaishnava Seva Nishtara Paisha Keva. Without serving a bona fide spiritual master, an ideal Vaishnava, who can be delivered from the clutches of Maya? This idea is also expressed in many other places. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Mahat Sevam Dwara Mahur Vamukte. If one desires liberation from the clutches of Maya, one must associate with a pure devotee, Mahatma. A Mahatma is one who engages 24 hours daily in the loving service of the Lord. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mahatmanastu mam parta daivim prakritamashrita bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutitim avyayam. O son of Prita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Thus, the symptom of a Mahatma is that he has no engagement other than service to Krishna. One must render service to a Vaishnava in order to get freed from sinful reactions, revive one's original Krishna consciousness, and be trained in how to love Krishna. This is the result of Mahatma Seva. Of course, if one engages in the service of a pure devotee, the reactions of one's sinful life are vanquished automatically. Devotional service is necessary not to drive away an insignificant stock of sins, but to awaken our dormant love for Krishna. As fog is vanquished at the first glimpse of sunlight, one's sinful reactions are automatically vanquished as soon as one begins serving a pure devotee. No separate endeavor is required. The word Krishna Arpita Prana refers to a devotee who dedicates his life to serving Krishna, not to being saved from the path to hellish life. A devotee is Narayana Parayana or Vasudeva Parayana, which means that the path of Vasudeva or the devotional path is his life and soul. Narayana Paraksarve Natkutastana Bibhuti. Such a devotee is not afraid of going anywhere. There is a path towards liberation in the higher planetary systems and a path towards the hellish planets. But a Narayana Para devotee is unafraid wherever he is sent. He simply wants to remember Krishna wherever he may be. Such a devotee is unconcerned with hell and heaven. He is simply attached to rendering service to Krishna. The four Kumaras and the Jayan Vijay. When Jayan Vijay were cursed by the four Kumaras, they said, "Let us go to the material world, but we just want to remember the Lord." And when the four Kumaras understood they had made a great mistake, they thought, "We're going to have to suffer, but never mind, let us suffer. But please let us be engaged in devotional service, hearing and chanting." So how wonderful when the heart is pure is hearing and chanting about the Lord. Why? Because Krishna is no different than his glories, than his name, than his pastimes, than his form. So by remembering Krishna in any of these ways, one associates with Krishna and is in that type of ecstasy if the heart is pure. So wherever one is, externally, if one is internally in ecstasy, what's the difference? So this is the mood of a devotee. They're not even concerned about being in ecstasy, but they're concerned about always serving Krishna in some way or another. Such a devotee is unconcerned with hell and heaven. He is simply attached to rendering service to Krishna. When a devotee is put into hellish conditions, he accepts them as Krishna's mercy. Tateinu kampam susumikshamana. He does not protest. He doesn't say, "Oh, how could this be happening to me? I'm such a great devotee of Krishna. Why have I have been put in this misery?" Instead, he thinks, "This is Krishna's mercy." Such an attitude is possible for a devotee who engages in the service of Krishna's representative. This is the secret of success. Next verse, 17. So this verse said, by Krishna Arpitam, by serving Arpita Prana, by serving Krishna's devotees, Tat Purushana Sevaya, fully, with one's full life, then everything, the purification, is complete. 17. Sadrichino yayam loke panta chemo kutobayam shushila sadavo yatra narayana parayana. The path followed by pure devotees who are well behaved and fully endowed with the best qualifications is certainly the most auspicious path in this material world. It is free from fear and is authorized by the Shastras. We'll read just the end of Prabhupada's purport. It is the highest path, but yet is for everyone. As confirmed here by the word sadrichina, bhakti is the path that is appropriate, not the paths of karmakanda and jnanakanda. Mayavadis may be shushil sarava, well-behaved saintly persons, but there is nevertheless some doubt about whether they are actually making progress, for they have not accepted the path of bhakti. On the other hand, those who follow the path of the Acharyas are Sushila and Sarva. But furthermore, their path is Akutobhaya, which means free from fear. Why? Why is it free from fear? Because as the devotee is giving everything to Krishna to the best of his ability, he is in Krishna's hands and Krishna is caring for him. The impersonalists think that the Supreme basically is nothing. So nothing cares for them. No one cares for them. But the devotees take shelter of Krishna, and therefore they are cared for. So that is the cause of their fearlessness. And therefore they can be both humble and bold simultaneously due to that type of fearlessness. So one should fearlessly follow the 12 Mahajans and their line of disciplic succession and thus be liberated from the clutches of Maya. 18. My dear king, as a pot containing liquor cannot be purified even if washed in the waters of many rivers, non-devotees cannot be purified by processes of atonement even if they perform them very well. So neither jnana or karma alone can purify one. One needs at least some bhakti. Even if one is a jnani, to attain success, one needs some bhakti. Even if one is a karmi, to attain success, one needs some devotion. Sakrin mana Krishna pararavindayo nivesitam tad gunaragi yariha. Nate yamam pashabritas tatad batan swapne api pashantihi chuna nishkrita. Although not having fully realized Krishna, persons who have even once surrendered completely unto his lotus feet and who have become attached to his name, form, qualities, and pastimes are completely freed of all sinful reactions. For they have thus accepted the true method of atonement. Even in dreams, such surrendered souls do not see Yamaraj or his order carriers who are equipped with ropes to bind the sinful. So contrast this to the previous verse, that even if a pot that has been full of liquor is brought to rivers and washed in so many different rivers, still it is not completely purified. That is compared to like karma and jnana, the attempt to purify the self through karma and jnana. But here, even if one has not fully realized Krishna, persons who have even once, sakrit, just once surrendered completely unto his lotus feet, and have become attracted to his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, they are completely freed of sinful reactions. And they will never get dragged away by Yamaraj, who comes to punish the sinful. So there is a long purport to this verse. I'll read just the final verse, and then maybe we can read the purport. In this regard, to show the power of this sakritbhakt, just even one time taking shelter of Krishna, in this regard, learned scholars and saintly persons describe the very old historical incident involving a discussion between the order carriers of Lord Vishnu and those of Yamaraj. Please hear of this for me. So now we're going to hear the history of the life of Ajamil, which is the chapter title. So we'll begin that tomorrow. But let me read this purport. How powerful bhakti is. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, here is Srila Prabhupada's purport, Savadamam Pratyaja Mamekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tam Sava Papebhyo Moksashami Masucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. This same principle is described here, Sakrin Mana Krishna Pararavindayo. If by studying Bhagavad Gita one decides to surrender to Krishna, he is immediately freed from all sinful reactions. It is also significant that Sukadeva Goswami, having several times repeated the words Vasudeva Parayana, Narayana Parayana, finally says here, Krishna Pararavindayo. Thus he indicates that Krishna is the origin of both Narayan and Vasudev. Even though Narayan and Vasudev are not different from Krishna, simply by surrendering to Krishna, one fully surrenders to all his expansions, such as Narayan, Vasudev, and Govinda. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Matak parataram na anyat, there is no truth superior to me. There are many names and forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Krishna is the Supreme Form. Krishna, Stu, Bhagavan, Sayam. Therefore, Krishna recommends to neophyte devotees that one should surrender unto him only, mamekam, because neophyte devotees cannot understand what the forms of Narayana, Vasudeva, and Govinda are. Krishna directly says, mamekam. Herein, this is also supported by the words Krishna Pararavindayo. Narayana does not speak personally, but Krishna or Vasudeva does, as in Bhagavad Gita, for example. Therefore, to follow the directions of Bhagavad Gita means to surrender unto Krishna. And to surrender in this way is the highest perfection of Bhakti Yoga. Prikkhit Maharaj had inquired from Sukadeva Goswami how one can be saved from falling into the various conditions of hellish life. In this verse, Sukadeva Goswami answers that a soul who has surrendered to Krishna certainly cannot go to Narak, hellish existence. To say nothing of going there, even in his dreams, he does not see Yamaraj or his order carriers who are able to take one there. In other words, if one wants to save himself from falling into Narak, hellish life, he should fully surrender to Krishna. The word Sakrid is significant because it indicates that if one sincerely surrenders to Krishna once, he is saved, even if by chance he falls down by committing sinful activities. Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Apichet sudarachiro bhajate mamananya bhak sadur eva se mantavya samyak vyavasito hisa. Even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated. If one never for a moment forgets Krishna, he is safe, even if by chance he falls down by committing sinful acts. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord also says, Neha bikrama nashosti pratyavayo navidyate saupam apyasya domasya trayate mahatobayat. In this endeavor, the devotional endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, no loss or lessening, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Elsewhere in the Gita 6:40, the Lord says, Nahi kalyanakrit kastid dugatim tatagachati. One who performs auspicious activity is never overcome by evil. The highest kalyana, auspicious activity, is to surrender to Krishna. That is the only path by which to save oneself from falling down into hellish life. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati has confirmed this as follows. Kaivalyam nirakayate tridasapura kashapushpayate turdantindriya kalasarpa patali prokata damstrayate Vishram punasakayate vidhi mahendra dischakitayate yat karunya kataksha bai baba vatam tam gurum evastuma. The sinful actions of one who has surrendered unto Krishna are compared to a snake with its poisonous fangs removed. Prokata damstrayate. Such a snake is no longer to be feared. Of course, one should not commit sinful activities on the strength of having surrendered to Krishna. However, even if one who has surrendered to Krishna happens to do something sinful because of his former habits, such sinful actions no longer have a destructive effect. Therefore, one should adhere to the lotus feet of Krishna very tightly and serve him under the direction of the spiritual master. Thus, in all conditions, one will be akuto bhaya, free from fear. So Sukadev Goswami is preaching very strongly here about the power of bhakti. Srila Prabhupada is preaching very strongly, following in his lotus footsteps. Lotus feet following in lotus footsteps. Okay, thank you very much. We'll continue tomorrow if Krishna allows. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Sukadev Goswami Prakrit Maharaj ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda.